Blog Talk Radio.
We talk a lot about the kingdom here, and we talk a lot about what most churches are afraid to talk about or don't even know to talk about, which is what the first century church was really doing. But just talking about it is not enough. We encourage everybody to join us in their local neighborhoods, in their local communities, to find out more about what they can do to seek the kingdom of God and His righteousness. Gather with others who are already starting this road or starting to turn around and do things differently. Join us on thelivingnetwork.org or at hisholychurch.org. Go to the network links or go to preparingyou.com. Join the network there. It's all the same. And we'll try to hook you up with people in your local area. They will not be perfect. They don't walk on water. They are not necessarily saints. But they are talking about seeking the kingdom of God and His righteousness. And join us on Facebook. Facebook.com, His Holy Church, all one word. Join us there. We'll give you updates so you can start doing some studying and thinking about these things and start looking into these things for yourselves. But it's just not enough to sit and listen or to talk about or to say. You must become a doer of the word.
Do you want to hear the truth about New York State and beyond? I'm Diana.
And I'm Dean.
Join us Thursday nights at 7:30 p.m. until 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we'll talk about everything New York State and beyond.
Yeah, nationwide news and local news and the tyranny that's going on here in New York State and what the Democrats are doing across the country, too.
We're going to talk about just about everything. Join us Thursdays, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, D&D, delivering the truth in New York State and beyond. See you then.
Okay, class, we want to talk about what we learned during the lockdown. The first question is, what did we learn during the quarantine, kids? Susie.
That government overreach is real.
What about you, Johnny? We went from home of the brave to home of the government slave. And you, Michael?
We need to refresh the tree of liberty.
What about you, Diane?
So many sheep are willing to give up their rights because of a little fear.
Very good, class.
Hello, I'm Mike. My birthing partner and I just got our new Lysnica Freedom microchips. These microchips are awesome. They help me keep the freedom I used to before I enrolled into Southern Hampshire Institute of Technology.
I am Jamar. I am friends with Mike and his birthing partner. We met at SHIT. I am a liberal media major. I also just got a Lysnica Freedom microchip. SNSHIT recently mandates everyone on campus get their freedom microchip. I jumped on the Lysnica joint.
This freedom chip grants me the freedom to go everywhere I was allowed to before COVID. Now this chip tells me when I am and am not allowed to go outside. It also tracks my boosters. If I'm not up to date on a chip, it tells me when I need to get it by.
This chip is sweet. Without this freedom chip, no one is allowed on our campus. I scan my hand whenever I want to pay for something. It also calls for an ambulance when I get another heart attack from a booster, which is totally not a heart attack from them getting a gene therapy.
These freedom chips are free. You can go to any drugstore or China Mart, and employed with inserted in your wrist.
Remember, it is not the mark of the beast. You just need to let Lysnica track and trace your every move. You just need a freedom chip to buy, sell, work, and live. When you get a microchip, look for the Lysnica Freedom microchips. They are sweet.
Hello, Freedomizers. I am Broccoli Man. When I am not fighting crime, I listen to the Proof Negative radio show.
I am the Wild Ritter. Not only do I forbid you to listen to Freedomizer Radio and the Proof Negative Radio Show, I am going to demand you wear a mask and get your naked body scan. We need to protect the One World Government. You getting the real information hurts a crime syndicate. Do not listen to Proof Negative. You must now disrobe this instant so I can check your person for a constitution or cash money.
Anyway, listen to Proof Negative on Freedomizer Radio. Weeknights 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. FreedomizerRadio.com.
Now, back to Proof Negative on Freedomizer Radio.
Welcome to the Proof Negative Radio Show, right here on FreedomizerRadio.com. Now sit back and enjoy the show.
News sometimes can be boring. However, if you know what to look for, it's not boring whatsoever. And we know what to look for. Stay tuned right now for the news that nobody else is talking about.
Well, Iran is up to, is it no good? Yeah, it's up to no good. Iran has always been this, the leadership has always been, not the people. I know a number of Persian people, and I adore them. I have great relationships with Persian people. It's not the Persian people, but it's Satan behind the Iranian leadership. Iran is famous for saying that the United States is big Satan and Israel is little Satan, and we must do away with big Satan and little Satan. Iran is famous for it. In fact, there is a video from about 15 years ago where you had the Ayatollah Khamenei, if you or speak Arabic maybe, but you had the Ayatollah chanting with the whole country was chanting, "Death to America, death to Israel, death to America." And it was unbelievable to see. And any time that anybody is chanting like that, you're going to get my attention. Why? Because we understand that the Bible tells us that the spirit of murder is not from God. So if you're wanting to kill somebody, that's not godly. And so if it's not godly, guess what? It's inspired demonically. Either you are inspired by the Word of God, either you are inspired by God, you are Holy Ghost filled, or you are inspired by the devil. You're demonic. You're demonically inspired. And we understand, we did a story last week about Elon Musk being demonically inspired. I don't think that Elon Musk thinks that he's demonically inspired, but when you're starting to put chips in people's brains, for goodness sakes, and wanted to be able to give the opportunity for you to be turned off or turned on based upon a chip in your brain, I'm out, bro. I'm done. And so that's demonically inspired. But we see now today that Iran, and here's the story, Iran may be able to build crude nuke within 6 months. The report says a new think tank reports details on how to deter Tehran from making the move to build a few crudely made nuclear weapons. Here's the story. A new think tank reports obtained by the Jerusalem Post warns of the possibility of Iran launching an accelerated effort to achieve a few crude nuclear weapons in 6 months. This is 6 months. According to Monday's report by the Institute for Science and the International Security, President David Albright, even though top Israeli officials recently told the Post that the Islamic Republic's weapons group was 2 years away from being able to deliver a nuclear warhead via ballistic missile, there could be a much more pressing threat. So, you know, in dealing with prophecy, you say, okay, great, we understand there's going to be a thing called Armageddon, which is going to be, that's in the future. That's after the rapture of the church. So it's not Armageddon. We're not talking about Armageddon here, but guess what? Before the rapture of the church, which is the seventh trumpet, before that happens, there's another event that takes place. That other event is called the sixth trumpet. It's mentioned, let me read it to you. If you're tuning in for the first time, let me read it to you. It's mentioned in Revelation chapter 9, verse 13 through 16. It says, and there was six, and the sixth angel sounded. So we know that the sixth angel sounds, and I heard a voice from the four horns of the golden altar, which is before God, saying to the sixth angel, which had the trumpet, that's how we know it's the sixth trumpet, it actually sounds, "Loose the four angels which are bound in the great river Euphrates." There you are. "And the four angels were loose for prepared for an hour, a day, a month, and a year for to slay a third part of man." Are we looking at an article that has the potential to slay the third part of man? Yes, nuclear war could happen. Are we looking at a country that hates America, hates Israel? Yes, Iran does. Is it possible that the sixth trumpet war was mentioned in today's article? It's very possible. Exciting times. Be ready in Jesus' name.
almost got arrested 2 days ago at the Federal Reserve for standing outside on the sidewalk.
We're talking about the Constitution.
What's really going on?
Nothing ever goes on my right hand or my forehead. I don't care who you are, what you're doing. It is against my religion to put any kind of a mark or symbol on that part of my body.
Do you want to know today?
And sure enough, one of those cards said terrorist nuke.
No
way.
Now,
their whole label clearly shows the Twin Towers of New York being struck with some sort of an aerial craft.
What are the real issues today? What are you dealing with? What is happening? There's a lot of people saying a lot of things, but we're going to talk about real issues and your life today on the Jesse Woodrow Show. Power is knowledge and the lack of it is death. I believe that if you don't have an understanding of the prophecies of the Bible, you find yourself dead in the water. We understand Hosea 4:6 says that that knowledge produces power. If you have knowledge about situations, that's why I say power is knowledge. The more you know, the more we know about the scam that is called the China virus, the more you know about this scam, the better. The more understanding that we have about life and about situations, the better. Welcome to the Jesse Woodrow Show. It is December 5th. We're already in December. Can you believe it? We're already here, December 5th, 2022. And I wanted to come to this mic tonight to try and give us a perspective of the future. I am starting to see the people around me. I'm starting to see my circle of influence. I'm starting to see the people that I speak to on a regular basis. I feel mentored by, and the people I mentor. I'm starting to see the consensus that times are going to get more difficult before they get better. Now, of course, if you've been a listener to this show for quite some time, for 15 years maybe, you understand that we have been saying for a long time that there is no magic carpet ride out of here. In fact, the first church would have loved for there to be a magic carpet ride out of here and no persecution at all. But as you know, the first church was persecuted tremendously. 11 of the 12 disciples were killed. There was great death. The disciples, the apostles, were thrown in prison for preaching the name of Jesus. Come on now. And so there was great persecution, great tribulation on the first church. And so to say that God is going to exempt his people from any kind of wrath would be a false statement, because the first church experienced great tribulation, great persecution. So does that mean that the last church is exempted from any kind of persecution, any kind of trouble, any kind of setbacks? Absolutely not. Do I believe that the last church that is on the earth before the seventh trumpet will enter into and experience tribulation and persecution? I got news. We are. We are going to experience extreme persecution, extreme tribulation. And I notice that the people around me now are starting to make a movement towards, Jesse, you just might be right. Now, I think a lot of people haven't crossed over. And still, there are thinkings, and there are people that I know that believe, in fact, we will somehow, some way, tomorrow morning, right now, just magically rise out of here and get out of any kind of anything. But and what the Bible tells us is that will always occur. There is coming a great falling away, the Bible explains, and the great falling away, there in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 1 through 4, it has a comma. And then the Son of Man, the Son of Perdition, will be revealed. The dragon, the Antichrist. And so I believe that, in fact, the presence and the rise and the revealing of the Antichrist will, in fact, cause people to fall away. Why? Because he'll enforce a financial ultimatum. He will say, unless you do the following, which is
take a mark in your right hand or your forehead and worship me and claim ultimate authority to me, you will not be able to buy or sell. And so there will be people just like we saw. There were great people in my local church, the great people that said, hey, I'm going to wear a mask. I'm going to take the vaccine. I'm going to do whatever I got to do to be able to go to the grocery store. Now, I've talked about this before, but I, you know, unfortunately was trying to fill gas one night in the car so I can get to work. And the lady screamed at me from, she's inside and screamed over the thing, put your mask on. I'm standing getting gas by myself. Ain't nobody even close to me, yo. And I yelled back and I said, no one's even here. I don't care. Put that mask on. And she, and I just felt so violated because I thought, who am I hurting? I'm standing here doing not hurting anybody. But guess what I did? I put the mask on because I had to feed my family. And that's where we begin tonight's show. Christianity will soon be outlawed. And I want to break down why I believe this. You might be tuning in for the first time. You might be a Christian yourself. And you might say, are you kidding me? You think Christianity will be outlawed? Absolutely. What do you mean by that? We're going to get into that tonight, but I'm going to try and take us down this hallway of, okay, here we are today. Here we are right now, where I think we'll be in 5 years or 10 years, where I think this will take place and how I think this will happen. So we understand, and let me just take you to some scripture. We know that in Daniel chapter 11, verse 37, let me just read this to you. By the way, if you're, like I said, if you're tuning in for the first time, we deal with prophecy here. We deal with the signs of the times. We believe that Daniel says that they that understand amongst the people shall instruct many, and we will do strong exploits. There will be great things that are done by your hands that God will use you and I to do great things. Why? Because we understand amongst the people. And in Daniel chapter 11, in that same area, Daniel chapter 11, verse 37, it says, neither shall he regard the God of his fathers. Now we're talking about the Antichrist, Satan incarnate in the flesh, nor the desire of women, nor regard any God, for he shall magnify himself above all. So that's a defining characteristic of the Antichrist. So if we continue to examine what the Antichrist is all about, is about himself, magnifying himself. He doesn't have the desire of women. He doesn't regard or worship the God of his fathers. So he'll be an anti-God individual, a atheist type of individual. People have often said that this is why they do believe that he might be gay, because he doesn't have the desire of women. I'm not sure if I'm ready to take that leap. It might be. The Antichrist might turn out to be gay. I wouldn't be surprised, by the way. I wouldn't be surprised because the devil literally is everything opposite from God. So whatever God is the devil is opposite. We look at the satanic Bible. They actually preach that you should indulge in all the so-called sins, where God says don't indulge in all the so-called sins. So exactly the opposite from God is what the devil is. And so if God wants a one man and one woman, or a married, you know, a couple, a man and a woman, if that's the way God designed the earth, then the devil is going to be the exact opposite. And so many times we see that the nation of Israel and the city of Jerusalem is being fought over for 6,000 years, not because there's gold there. Believe me, there's nothing there. The only reason the devil wants it is because God said in Genesis 15:18, he said, that's where I'm going to place my name. My people are going to be there. And so the devil says, oh, well, I want it. So oftentimes you see this this fight between good and evil. We know about this fight between good and evil. And I believe that Christianity will soon be outlawed. Now, where I think this whole thing took a big turn was the Me Too movement. There's this cancel culture that kind of just crept up on us. And before that, there was, you know, people would do things, but that Me Too movement and Matt Lauer being fired and Weinstein, all these different people getting immediately canceled because of bad behavior, it's, as they should have. But I'm saying that the overwhelming flood of cancel culture, of course, started then. And then also you have Trump. Then you have Trump come in office and it really created, there was a divide. Bush and Obama, there was a divide. There was a divide between Clinton and Bush years ago. There's always been a divide. But Trump was, that was the time that you really go, oh my goodness. And Trump is running again in 2024. And I can't even, I shudder to even, like, you know, I've even thought to myself, if I wear a Make America Great Again hat, you know, you could be walking down the street and be punched in the face. You could be shot. You could be, I mean, it's literally got to that point at this time in 2022. So you look at this idea that Christianity will indeed be outlawed. I absolutely agree. And I have verse for it. I have reason for it. But before I get to the verse, I want to take you to this idea of cancel culture and how that feeds into the demonic and how it will actually funnel right into the mark of the beast, the Antichrist, and the one world governmental system. That there'll be a financial ultimatum system. The way that that has all transpired over time, which is this funnel of cancel culture, cancel him, he doesn't do what we want. Then you had Twitter and Facebook, the New York Post story about Hunter Biden's laptop. It was very obvious that was his, let me tell you something, bro. That was his laptop, okay? Everyone know it. Everyone knew it. Come on, that's a joke. And for Twitter and Facebook to receive input now, we learn from the files that were released last week that, in fact, the FBI, the government, did instruct Facebook and Twitter to go ahead and delete that story, asked them to, told them it's going to happen, and they did it. And so you have coercion between government and private entities. We've always known this is the case. If you're a conspiracy theorist at all, if you're into truth at all, you know this is the case. But to have it now plainly put out there for us conspiracy theorists, we say, ah, we were right again. And so it turns out that we're not conspiracy theorists, that we're truth theorists. So Christianity will soon become illegal. And let me take you to another story that I just found today. This is very unique. I wanted to bring this to your attention. Let me just flip over here and do this for you. Let's see, where is this story? Is it right there or right there? No, it's over here. Yes, here it is. Okay, here's the story. A restaurant cancels Christian group's party after the LGBT waitstaff refused service. Let me just go ahead and read this for us real quickly, purposes of this discussion tonight. A popular restaurant in Richmond, Virginia, canceled a Christian ministry's private party just 90 minutes before it was scheduled to start because LGBT staff members refused to provide service for the event. So there's the story. I mean, you have now Christianity being targeted, that people who do not agree with Christianity are going to straight up say they're entering into the financial. There's a financial a piece to this puzzle, which is not only will we don't like you and we just don't want you here, we're going to cancel the party. You're not going to be allowed to even give us money. And to business owners, I mean, this is crazy to me. I got people coming in wanting to spend money in a business, and because I got staff that's against it, I'm going to have to cancel. But that's where the country is. That's where America is. And guess what? It's going to happen to the entire world. There is going to be an entire world out there that will cancel Christianity because of simply what we believe. And this is a prime example. It's 2022 and it's already happening. They're already canceling events because straight up they don't like Christianity. So Christianity will be illegal in the very near future. Mark my words. Now, when do I think it'll be illegal? I know for a fact it will be illegal when the Antichrist comes to power. Now, when is that going to happen? If there is an agreement that starts the final 7 years this year, then you can count out 3.5 years. That's when the Antichrist comes to power, and there will be a buildup. There will be a buildup. The Bible explains, we did the show at the very top, we did the, a story about how the sixth trumpet war will happen. That's in Revelation chapter 9, verse 13 through 16. That's a war that's going to kill one-third of mankind with a 200 million man army, and the only way you can really do that is through nuclear war. And so there will be a nuclear war, probably religious in nature, meaning it would be religions against religions. It's usually, we had the Iraq war, it was government versus Muslim, you know, terrorist, and the basis of that supposedly was, Bin Laden, if you will, Saddam Hussein, Muslim against Christian, you know. So it will be probably a religious war, and at some point, the consensus of the entire world will be, hey, you religions, you got to stop fighting all the time. I'm sick of this. No more fighting, religious fighting. And so all of a sudden, on the scene, then arrives this man called the Antichrist, and he'll be called the Messiah. He'll be called the Savior of the world. The Pope will love him. The Pope will absolutely catapult him to fame and dominance in the world. And so Christianity will be will soon be very illegal. In fact, I believe the words of Jesus said the following. In Matthew 24, I'm sorry, let's go to Mark, actually. Mark 13, let me read this to you. In Mark 13, it says, "But take heed to yourselves, for they shall deliver you up to councils and in the synagogues." Now, why are they going to deliver you up into councils? Is councils court? Yes. They will deliver you up into courts. "And in the synagogues you shall be beaten. You shall be brought before rulers and kings for my sake." This is Jesus talking, by the way. So we have the words of Jesus. You know what's really nice is when you come up with a theology or when you have a teaching and Jesus repeats your theology. You know, when you have a theology and you're teaching and you're preaching and you don't really got scripture for it and you just got an idea, maybe this will happen, maybe that will happen. It's horrible. In fact, it would be not advised. Don't do that. You're not allowed to do that. You got to have everything based in the Bible. Well, I believe, according to Jesus' words here in Mark chapter 13, verse 9 through 14, Jesus in fact himself says that they will deliver us up to councils before kings and rulers. And it will be for, guess what? His name's sake. It'll be for Jesus. Christianity will soon be illegal, and Jesus tells us it will. "For a testimony against them," it says, "and the gospel must be preached, must be published among all nations. But when they shall lead you and deliver you up, take no thought beforehand what ye shall speak, neither do ye premeditate. For whatsoever shall be given you in that hour, that speak ye." So, essentially, Jesus is saying, look, I know you're going to go before these kings and rulers and you're going to be beaten for my name's sake. They're going to say, how dare you preach that name of Jesus? And I don't want you to go up there and be scared about what you're going to say. I want you to go up there and know that when you start to speak, I'm going to speak through you and I'm going to get, gosh, I feel the Holy Ghost as I'm talking right now. I feel the Holy Ghost. To say to somebody that God has not given you the spirit of fear, but God has given you power, love, and a sound mind. God is not going to put you in a place where you're going to be deemed for failure, but God is going to raise you up. God's going to give you the strength. God's going to do things in your life. He's going to allow challenges in our life. He's going to allow situations in our life. He's going to allow tough, difficult things to happen so that he can build our strength, so he can build upon that rock, which is him himself. I believe that God is raising up people right now in Jesus' name that are going to know the signs of the times, that are going to know the prophecies, that are going to know what's happening, because Daniel chapter 11 says They that understand amongst the people shall instruct many. My people will be strong and do exploits. God's going to raise up a group of people that are watching this show. I believe that if you're watching this show right now, God's going to use you in this end time. I believe I want to be used of God. The Bible says that it is okay and acceptable to pursue and to be hungry for prophecy. It's to be hungry for the things of the Lord. And I'm hungry for the things of the Lord tonight. I believe God has set us aside. He's called all, but he's chosen a few tonight. And I believe that you and I are part of that chosen few that God's going to use in this end time to get the message of the gospel. What's the most important part? The gospel message. It's not that there's going to be a war that kills one-third of mankind. That's important. It's a prophecy of the Bible. And it's important that Christianity, to understand that Christianity will be illegal at some point. I get that. I understand that. But the most important part is that we take as many people, that we allow God to use us and preach the gospel in season and out of season. Preach the truth. Jesus says that you must worship God in spirit and in truth, John 4:24. So it's important for us to be bold in the synagogues, to be bold with our friends, and to love people beyond else, because if you don't show love to people, how are you supposed to gain influence if there's no love in your speech? Jesus says they'll know you by the love you have one towards another. So let's be loving to our friend. But we see here in Mark chapter 13 that when they lead you, in verse 11, but when they lead you up, deliver you, take no thought beforehand what you speak, neither what you do.
The evidence so far raises this distinct possibility that the black share of the electorate sank to its lowest level since 2006. It certainly did in states like Georgia, where authoritative data is already available. Joining me now is Florida Congressman Byron Donalds. Congressman, now the data here reveals that the Democrats remain, you know, almost wholly dependent now on white, college-educated voters, especially women. So how damaging is this now on the African-American side for the Democrats?
It's very damaging simply because black voters have seen, frankly, with year after year of the same gaslighting, the same talking points, the same promises that go nowhere, and the actual ineffectiveness of what happens when they govern. Economies go bad, borders are wide open, people are, you know, they're actually subverting the law, they're suppressing free speech, World War III may be breaking out. The implications of Democrat governance are clear for everybody to see, not to mention crimes. And, oh, yeah, by the way, they don't want your kids to get the best education possible. Black voters have had enough, and that's why you're seeing this constant shift. Now, I will say to my colleagues and on the Republican side of the aisle, that doesn't mean they love us. We have a job to do with black voters and, frankly, all voters in the United States to demonstrate what conservatism actually is and how that can help all people in America.
Yeah, and that doesn't include agreeing to omnibus spending bills that give Democrats all the power and us no leverage next year. It's ridiculous. Now, Congressman, we have some breaking news tonight that Georgia Lieutenant Governor was back on CNN again tonight with another masterful performance.
Herschel Walker is going to go down as probably the worst Republican candidate in the history of politics, right? It's just no way to run away from that. And I think the energy level behind his support, it's, you know, the best case being made right now is, well, he's going to be a Republican vote for us. And certainly that means a lot to me. I care about Republicanism. I care about conservatism. I'm passionate about it.
Congressman, this is a top Republican official in the state of Georgia throwing our candidate under the bus. Unbelievable.
Laura, I'm normally professional on your show, but I'm going to discard that. Listen, I'm a Tea Party activist. That's how I got into politics. We were lectured time and time again that you got to support the team, get behind whoever the nominee is so we can go in. So for the gall for this guy to show up and say, oh, I couldn't vote, is absolutely ridiculous. You want to go do that, Jeff Duncan? Stop being lieutenant governor. Go be a normal citizen. It is atrocious. When you have a Republican on the ballot, you show up and you get the job done if you're going to be in elective office. But to do this mess, no, I'm sorry. This guy's got to go. I'm sick of him.
No, he's a complete nightmare. The Democrats never pull that kind of stunt on their candidates, never. Congressman, great to see you. In December of 2020, my next guest daughter first started expressing the sentiment that she didn't feel like a girl anymore and that she felt like hurting herself. Now, the daughter, who we aren't naming to protect her identity, was only 12 at the time, and she had a history of anxiety and depression. Tammy, the mother, said they decided to work on her mental health and try to improve her self-esteem before making such a drastic change. The next morning, Tammy's daughter went to a mental health provider in town. Now, Tammy said that staff immediately started referring her 12-year-old daughter as a boy named Leo, and a day later suggested that she go on medication. They urged Tammy and her husband to use the name Leo and male pronouns when talking to their daughter. Now, Tammy didn't agree to that and says the facility didn't first address the underlying issues of depression and anxiety that their daughter was suffering from. Tammy told the school what was going on, and before the end of winter break, explained that she wanted her daughter to be referred to as a girl and by her birth name. Now, what happened next led Tammy and her husband to sue the school district. Tammy joins me now. Tammy, you had two calls, I know, with the principal. And it was the second call when he told you how the school was going to treat your daughter? Now, what did he say?
He said that he is an advocate, or the school district is an advocate of the child and not of the parent. And they currently have a policy in place where they allow the use of nicknames. And because my daughter was choosing to go by a different name, they were going to allow it.
Well, wait a second. So you told them that your daughter was to be referred to by her birth name, and that simply didn't matter to them?
No, they said that they have a policy in place where they allow nicknames, and they are an advocate of the child, and they cannot infringe on the child's rights at school.
Now, Tammy, here's an email confirmed by your attorney that your daughter received from district staff member saying that you're so brave and I'm proud of you for being strong enough to be you. You are an amazing person and you will be happier now that you can honor who you are. Tammy, as a mom, what was your reaction upon reading this?
I was quite upset. She had a long-running rapport with the staff member who sent that email. But my underlying issue was the school itself, the district, once they were aware of my request to use her birth name and gender until we had it fully looked into, they refused.
Now, your daughter was apparently really mad at you. I know when this was unfolding initially.
Yes.
What's your relationship? I mean, I'm a mom of three kids, 17, 14, and 12, so I know that, you know, raising kids is not easy today, for sure. Some days they do hate you. But how is your relationship now with your daughter?
I believe it's wonderful. It's obviously not perfect. She's a teenage girl, and I'm a mother trying to raise her, but she's substantially more stable than she was then. She's happy and healthy, and she trusts me.
And Tammy, what ultimately happened? Did you pull her out of the school, or where is she now?
Yes, I did. I did pull her out of the school as soon as they told me that they were going to disregard what I wanted for the mental health of my child. And she's currently in a public school in Wisconsin in a different district. She's happy and thriving. She doesn't have any problems at all with gender dysphoria that seemed to correct after she spoke to a provider that was willing to, you know, dive in to the thoughts that were going on in her head.
Oh. Well, did she get the thoughts about gender transition or changing her gender from the culture, the media, TikTok, friends? You know, where did she even get the idea?
I would say that definitely social media played a large role in where she got the idea of it. generally, from my perception of what happened with my daughter, is she felt very lost and alone and isolated during COVID, and she was sad, and she was looking for any place to belong, and she thought that this was it, because as soon as she came out as transgender, there was a lot of people that supported her in that decision. But once she started to reflect on the long-term effects of making such a life choice, because it was important to me that if she was going to make that decision, that, okay, well, you're going to make it like an adult now, and we're going to sit down and we're going to discuss the ramifications that come from any choice you might make
this direction. This is so wild what's happening to our children. Tammy, thank you for speaking out. Thank you for standing up, and good luck with your lawsuit.
All right, guys, so because of the end of the year, we all know there's going to be a whole bunch of awards for people who were important during the year of 2022 and their impact. And one of the most notable kind of awards or, you know, lists or, you know, recognitions is the Times Person of the Year. And they have released their short list of individuals that, you know, could be the person of the year. And Ron DeSantis is on the list, and MSNBC is not happy about that. In fact, Mika Brzezinski is going to openly fume about Ron DeSantis being on Time's Person of the Year list. Take a look.
2022 winds down. We are beginning to reflect on the year that was. That includes the highly anticipated revealing of Time's annual Person of the Year. Last year, it was Tesla CEO Elon Musk, who now looks to join former President Richard Nixon as the only person to win the award in consecutive years. Joining us now to reveal the rest of the Person of the Year finalists, executive editor of Time, Ben Goldberger, and we've been giving Ben trouble here because we think some of them are placeholders. I don't see some of these, but let's go over the short list, Ben. Okay, go ahead, John Hammond, you take it. Take the first question for Ben. But I think some of them are placeholders.
Ben, would you like to
explain?
Just explain to us the nature of the shortlist.
Yes, that's good.
What is the shortlist? What is the shortlist?
Okay, I'm going to read the shortlist. Hold on. This makes sense, Xi Jinping. This makes sense, the U.S. Supreme Court. This could make sense, Elon Musk. Liz Cheney, Volodymyr Zelensky, makes sense. Mackenzie Scott, protesters in Iran, makes sense. Ron DeSantis makes no sense to me. Gun safety advocate.
Not just on this list.
By the way,
in general.
By the way, that was a blanket statement.
How about Janet Yellen? She makes sense to you?
No.
Not right.
No, although amazing.
I mean, yes, no just to Janet Yellen, but you know.
Should we let Ben talk? I don't know.
Yeah.
We could just talk about him.
Just sit here and listen.
No, listen. So who's really the short list here?
This is the short list. I mean, as we sit down to begin the process of Person of the Year, we start really as summer gives way to fall. We have a huge staff-wide meeting, and the goal is to take stock of influence in all of its forms across all different types of newsmakers.
Negative or positive.
Well, I'm glad you said that earlier, too,
yeah.
Your setup. I think it's often forgotten that Person of the Year is meant to be a recognition of influence, whether for good or for ill. Influence is not inherently positive, and it isn't an award, despite it being taken that way by a certain former president.
Why not Putin on the short list?
That's a really good question. I think despite what you were just saying, Jonathan, about Putin's incursion into Crimea, if anything, this invasion has exposed his relative lack of influence.
Mm.
He may be one of the world's primary aggressors, but his influence has only diminished. They were supposed to have captured Kyiv in, 3 days, according to U.S. intelligence? We're now nearly a year in, and he is less popular at home than he has been in many years.
So let's take the other side of that.
You know, short list, 10 entries. It's not very short.
That's not a short
list.
There's
short
some placeholders
list.
There.
That's not a long list. There's a lot of constituent service going on there. Ron DeSantis. She was a make him explain Ron DeSantis.
I can't.
I don't mean existentially.
Right.
I mean explain his presence
if you could,
on this
that
list.
Would be good.
No, I can't do the Dow of DeSantis. But his presence on the list is because he won re-election in a massive landslide. He flipped Miami-Dade, and much to the chagrin of a prominent former constituent, is on the cusp of really being the front runner for the Republican nomination.
So Zelensky is on the cusp of winning the largest land war in Europe against a country 10 times its size.
Mm-hmm.
That's the victory that he has in his sights. Ron DeSantis won Miami-Dade County, so those are kind of like the parallel. That's the, in terms of influence, those are the kind of things we're really talking about.
Yeah, so there's a whole lot to kind of break down here, okay? And it might be confusing because this conversation was confusing and all over the place and all types of contradictions because, again, we really don't know. Is this list supposed to be about global influence or is it supposed to be about, I guess, I don't know, is it domestic? I'm not entirely sure. Right? Because the argument they used against Ron DeSantis was that, well, he just has influence in his state. And, I mean, he's the most influential governor in the country, okay? But because, you know, it's not a global influence, then, you know, we don't know why he should be on the list or whatever, right? We're comparing people with global influence to people who have just domestic influence. And if that's the case, then why the hell is Liz Cheney on the list, right? Like, Liz Cheney shouldn't be up there either, okay? But we're going to get back to that, right? I first want to say this about the whole Putin thing. I don't understand how can you put Vladimir Zelensky on the list but not Putin? Because, I mean, to me, from a global influence perspective, the Democrats blame everything on Putin, right? Energy prices, gas prices, right? Everything, all of the world's problems is Putin. Allegedly, they're scared to death of him buying Facebook ads to potentially swing the outcome of U.S. elections, right? The Democrats are scared to death over that, apparently, right? Allegedly. So, again, obviously, this list doesn't necessarily care about whether it's positive or negative. They just care about overall influence, which is why Xi Jinping is on the list, right? A dictator who literally is oppressing their citizens as we speak, okay, with these COVID lockdowns. He can be on the list, but Putin can't. Presumably because he started the war in Ukraine. Again, that's the only reason why he wouldn't be on the list, because his influence is clearly just as influential, if not more influential than Vladimir Zelensky. Again, Vladimir Zelensky's influence for me is basically taking money out of my pocket. I mean, this guy, again, he's a dependent on every American citizen's tax returns. I mean, at this point, okay? Ukraine is a dependent state. That is the most influence that guy has had on me, okay? So, again, I don't necessarily mind him being on the list, but if you're going to throw him on the list, if you're going to throw Xi Jinping on the list, you got to put Putin on the list. It seems like Putin's not on the list. Literally, it's just a protest or F you to him, a cancellation of him simply because of the war in Ukraine, which to me is a clear contradiction when you have Xi Jinping on the list and the fact that he is basically about to try to invade Taiwan. He hasn't done it yet, but again, we can have a situation like that on our hands. He's oppressing his citizens. Clearly not a good guy, right? Putin's not a good guy either. The war in Ukraine, him starting that was bad, okay? So again, if we're canceling dictators because they did bad stuff, if Putin's not going to be on the list, then Xi Jinping shouldn't be on the list either. I'm just saying, where's the consistency here? But hey, I'm not surprised because all these people are in bed with China, okay? So I'm saying, like, there's all types of contradictions going on here. Right. But what Mika Brzezinski is frustrated over, she's clearly upset. She's clearly triggered and butthurt, is that Ron DeSantis is on the list. And I'm like, OK, you do realize that Ron DeSantis is the most influential governor in this country. Right. Like all the Republican governors are following Ron DeSantis's lead. At some point, I actually think that legislation in Congress will start to follow Ron DeSantis's lead. Because the guy has been that good of a leader for the Republican Party, right? That's just a fact, okay? I mean, he is driving the Republican Party from an ideological perspective, and that is what is happening. And in my opinion, he has much more influence over the Republican Party than Liz Cheney. So how the hell can it make sense for Liz Cheney to be on the list, but not Ron DeSantis? Liz Cheney is on the way out. She got voted out. The January 6th commission was an absolute disaster. People didn't watch it. People didn't pay attention to it. It swung nobody's opinions. Everybody who hated Trump before then still hates him. People that liked Trump before then still likes him. Like, it changed nothing. It was an absolute failure, and she got blown out in a landslide loss in her own state, in Wyoming. So, again, I'm trying to figure out, why does it make sense for Liz Cheney to be on the list but not Ron DeSantis? Liz Cheney is on the way out. She's not influential even in the Republican Party compared to Ron DeSantis, and damn sure not that influential in the country, right? She's literally on the list because she earned brownie points for being anti-Trump, for being a anti-Trump Republican. You see what's going on here, guys? This is the type of stuff that mainstream liberal media does that annoys me. They get brownie points to things that you should not gain points for. You should get points simply because you're anti-Trump Republican. Because she was an absolute failure at swaying anybody's opinion on the former president of the United States. So that in and of itself, again, she shouldn't get points for being an anti-Trump Republican. And also, again, she failed at actually swaying people's opinions. So why is she on the list? She has no influence. Her influence pales in comparison to Ron DeSantis. So I don't understand why she's on the list at all. She's the one person on the list that makes the least sense to me out of everybody on the list, right? Again, I'm just saying, I find it funny how she said Elon Musk could make sense. No, Elon Musk, actually, out of everybody on the list, in my opinion, is the clear front runner, right? He's the clear winner because he's not an evil dictator, right? He's not Xi Jinping or Putin. The guy clearly has global influence as well as domestic influence. I mean, he's probably the most important person in the United States right now, okay? Everybody is talking about Elon Musk because of his purchase of Twitter and his influence on politics and the free speech debate. Again, the guy is single-handedly probably the most influential person in the country right now, okay? Also, you can't forget, again, from a international perspective, he's providing Starlink to Ukraine, okay? He is literally their communications infrastructure. He's also engaging in electromagnetic warfare with Russia. He's literally an enemy of Putin. The guy is providing internet to the world, not even just Ukraine, but he's trying to provide internet to the world. You have SpaceX. I mean, clearly he is the Times 2022 person of the year. He should be if this was an objective thing, okay? I'm just saying, the guy has truly had a global influence on almost everybody, okay? But, you know, he's going to lose points, right? Because, you know, they say he's pro-Trump now, right? He's pro-Republican, so now he's going to lose points. Well, he clearly should be the winner. I just find it funny how that works, right? These people, again, they're so insane. Let me know what you guys think. Make sure you like, comment, subscribe, most importantly, share a Black conservative perspective. Peace.
Soda. It's everywhere. You can't escape it. It's the real goddamn thing. Like rats in New York or failed actors in LA, most human beings are rarely more than a few feet from a can of this caramelized corn gravy. But what is soda? Soda is a drink, carbonated and flavored with a variety of ingredients and usually sweetened with sugar, also known as death salt. Soda is dispersed from fountains, sold in bottles and cans, and in movie tie-in merchandise. While what they produce is nothing more than sugar-blasted tap water, soda companies inspire deep, emotional ties to their products. Globally, the Coca-Cola logo is a better recognized symbol than the crucifixion. What? Don't look at me like that. It's not my fault you don't come in cherry flavor. While today soda is known for its tooth-eroding, waistline-widening properties, it began life as a medicinal product. In the 1800s, soda fountains were a ubiquitous feature of drugstores and pharmacies in America. Behind the bar, you'd find a soda jerk, what they were actually called, who would pump carbonated water into a menagerie of dubious but delicious medical ingredients. But it turned out that people really enjoyed the mouth massage offered by these bubbly broths, and so soda fountains became a battleground of competing flavors. But everything changed in 1886, when a man named John Doc Pemberton invented French wine coca, later renamed Coca-Cola. Pemberton was an Atlanta pharmacy owner and a former Confederate soldier, who'd bought a dubious $5 medical license so that he could call himself a doctor. Initially, his recipe included both alcohol and cocaine, also known as argument powder. But Pemberton himself was more partial to morphine, dying while addicted 2 years after he invented his signature drink.
but the Coca-Cola company prefers to focus on the drink's down-home country origins. Like in this nostalgic promotional film, featuring old Doc Pemberton, the gentleman smackhead, mixing his cocaine-laced booze broth with what looks like a rowing oar. It took 17 years and an enforcement of local prohibition laws before Coca-Cola lost both booze and cocaine from its recipe. But in that time, it built a small, loyal following of frenzied tweakers. But Coca-Cola's first real step to global domination came with a pioneering ad campaign. Representatives of the company would go to the most popular soda fountains in town, find who their most loyal customers were, and then send these cereal soda chuggers coupons for their brand, inspiring emotional loyalty before letting chemical dependency do the rest. The company was so successful that it inspired an army of cola clones to bubble to the surface, including Brad's Drink, later renamed Pepsi Cola in 1898 to capitalize on the cola craze. In order to stand out from their new competitors, Coca-Cola gave every bottle they produced a distinctive pair of child-bearing hips, so even a blind person would be able to recognize a bottle of their brown, fizzy migraine soup. Today, marketing is still utterly integral to how these brands maintain their vicious chokehold on the nation's collective neckpipes. In 2018, Coca-Cola's marketing budget was an absurd $5.8 billion, which is nearly double the yearly GDP of Barbados. And Pepsi isn't far behind, spending $4.3 billion in the same year. Big Soda's propaganda departments use these bloated budgets to buy up any form of eye real estate that you might associate with a good time. This can involve plastering their logos onto the foreheads of every stadium in the world, or it can be more subtle, something like product placement. And I'm sure you guys are far too sophisticated to be swayed by these kinds of propaganda campaigns. Your minds are as clear and refreshing as an ice-cold can of Cran Raspberry LaCroix. Ah, LaCroix. It tastes like having fruit described to you.
Fuck you.
Coca-Cola steadily increased their sales over the first half of the 20th century, but their Third Reich truly took off in the Second World War. The company made a deal with the US Army. In exchange for an exception in sugar rationing, they promised to provide every soldier a refreshing bottle of Coca-Cola for no more than a nickel. And this was a win-win for Coca-Cola. Not only did it protect its overheads, but it also allowed them to scatter bottling plants everywhere that American GIs were scattering limbs. Coca-Cola dominated the soda market for decades after World War II, so Pepsi had to bide its time before marketing its drink to a new generation.
The right one, the modern light one, now it's Pepsi, for those who think young.
Pepsi belongs to your generation.
Coca-Cola responded to Pepsi's threat and produced one of the most iconic adverts of all time. From this point on, all big soda companies followed the Catholic Church school of marketing. Get them while they're young and they'll never forget you. Today, big soda companies will make a big song and dance about not advertising directly to anyone under the age of 12. But anyone that's lived longer than a dozen sun cycles? Well, let's see how a former marketing executive at Coca-Cola puts it.
Well, let me be really clear. As a marketer at Coca-Cola, I was specifically, I was never told not to market to kids. It just was not done overtly. Now, I can get to as soon as they turn 12, you know, I'm like a rabid dog on a something.
Selling to preteens is a huge part of Fat Soda's marketing strategy, which is probably why Pepsi hired the number one expert in preteen persuasion to be their spokesperson in the 1980s. The smooth criminal himself seen here grooming a gang of street kids to slurp down Pepsi's sticky syrup. Pepsi might have secured the king of pop, but in the same era, Coca-Cola ran this campaign with the king of popping pills. Because who wouldn't want to share a glass of suspicious fizzy liquid with Bill Cosby?
Ready to drink. Coca-Cola, now.
These youth-focused campaigns have been the cornerstone of Fat Soda's marketing strategy ever since, and it clearly works. Between 2011 and 2014, two-thirds of children in America drank one sugary drink a day, and 30% of them drank two or more. In many markets, it still outsells water substantially. So how did this overconsumption begin?
Hey, all I want is a Pepsi.
From the early 1980s to the early 2000s, the soda industry experienced its golden age. Two decades of a continuous rise in both production and consumption. Rotund Soda achieved this partly by expanding to more international markets.
But their smartest move wasn't getting more people to drink soda, it was getting them to drink more of it. And they did this by slowly normalizing the consumption of their products by the fucking bucketful. This was how Pepsi advertised their new, large, 12-ounce bottle in the 1960s, designed to be shared between three people.
Next time you have lots of people around, have lots of Pepsi half-quarts around. The one that pours three big servings for three big thirsts.
Less than 20 years later, 7-Eleven, America's favorite public toilet, were advertising the 32-ounce Big Gulp, meant to be choked down by a single, probably quite sad, individual. They first served it up with this slogan in 1982.
But 7-Eleven's Big Gulp gives you another kind of freedom. Freedom of choice.
What they don't tell you, though, is that that choice is between an extra large or king-size coffin. Peak soda consumption arrived in 1999, reaching 50 gallons per person per year. That's enough for every man, woman, and child in America to take a bath in the stuff, provided they can fit in the tub. This level of consumption was nearly double what it was in 1980 when this 20-year cold streak began. And by a sheer and total coinkydink, the other thing that doubled in this time was global obesity rates. A connection that Big Soda pays good money to divert your attention from, as these companies are responsible for more misinformation than they are diabetic amputations. Rotund Soda's war on facts began in 1961, like in this advert where a Stepford wife tells you that Coke actually keeps you skinny.
Ice cold Coca-Cola. There's no waistline worry with Coke, you know.
And even then, this is probably about as convincing as a YouTuber doing an ad read for Raid Shadow Legends.
Oh, and remember, Coke is low in calories, too. Hey, now, don't you get any thinner.
Between 2011 and 2015, Coca-Cola and Pepsi funded a total of 86 national health organizations. What these companies get in exchange for this funding is an army of shills, I mean scientists, who will give paid lectures attesting to the fact that soda isn't really that bad for you, even though the scientific consensus is the opposite. Until very recently, Coca-Cola and Pepsi were the primary funders of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, the world's largest body of food and nutrition experts. Which is a bit like finding out the world's largest women's rights organization is funded by Ted Bundy. And the Coca-Cola Foundation have said that a third of their philanthropic spending goes towards countering obesity. All this philanthropy is a marketing strategy in disguise. A strategy that nutrition experts who aren't in the pockets of Big Soda call health washing. Or what I like to call the Marty McFly School of Sucker Punch Distraction.
Now, whoa, Biff, what's that?
Fat soda only funds organizations, studies, and individuals who can help them shift the blame from consumption onto exercise as the solution to the obesity crisis. And this same pattern is also behind Fat Soda's ludicrous spending on sports sponsorship. Coca-Cola has been the sponsor of the Olympic Games since 1928 and has been the sponsor of the World Cup since the late 70s. So when these events aren't displaying the achievements of professional ball chasers and doped-up Russian supermen, they are selling you soda, building a strong association between these products and athletic excellence. And it's not just events and locations. The sporting world's favorite meat vessels are also fair game. When LeBron James isn't working as a mouthpiece for the Chinese government, he's shilling for America's own red menace, having signed a six-year endorsement deal with Coca-Cola worth $16 million. Sports celebrities perform two functions for soda companies. They help inspire emotional loyalty in fans, and they help insinuate the idea that soda drinking at least isn't incompatible with healthy living. How can our drinks possibly make you fat? We're friends with all the people who chase ball for money. But there is good news. In 2017, bottled water sales outstripped soda for the first time. Which, granted, is still bad for the earth, but it is better for your continued presence on it. People are increasingly aware that even a moderate soda habit substantially increases the risk of obesity, type 2 diabetes, and cardiovascular disease. But knowledge isn't going to stop what soda companies are best at, bypassing your logic center and aiming straight for your weakened, sugar-sped heart. Like in this 2011 Reasons to Believe campaign, in which a group of suspiciously normal-sized children sing Oasis and remind us that, hey, we might live in a world full of missiles and people getting pushed into threshing machines, but at least there's lots of cuddly little teddy bears. It's a very well-made advert, but its info is a little bit outdated, so I've decided to update it with a few stats of my own.
I'm free to be whatever I
Oh, hi. Didn't see you there. I'd just like to take this opportunity to thank all 50 of my very generous patrons. You guys keep ordering.
Right there, green dude. I need to talk to you right this instant.
Not today, wiretap. I do not want to discuss you trying to take a selfie with my kumquats. Or that you need to make me go to drag queen story time with you.
I was not going to say any other green dude. I was going to ask you a couple music questions. One, the song called Hurt. Who did it better? Globalist says Johnny Cash did it better, but I prefer the original by Nine Inch Nails. And who did you prefer in Van Halen? Globalist says Sammy Hagar was better, but once again I prefer the original. David Lee Roth was the best. I asked the factor and she gave me a fact strike for being too controversial.
Why are you involving me in this?
Come on, green dude. I bet you, globalist, that you would agree with me. We have a lunch best for each of them. Please do not side with G. Globalist. He wants to take me to eat his bugs if I lose. Eating maggots and mealworms are for you 99% dolts in something that cares. Not for us 1% who rule all over the earth.
Why would I care if you have to eat ZE bugs? You are trying to force me to eat ZE bugs.
Come on, green dude. Johnny Cash was okay. But he said he wears a crown of thorns. Trent Reznor just comes out and owns it when he says he wears a crown of shaw.
I do not have a favorite in either song. I usually side with the original. But that Johnny Cash was one of the best remakes ever in the history of music. I do not have a favorite. And I was never a Van Halen fan. I preferred Def Leppard.
That tears it, green dude. You are unable to answer simple questions. You are a total square, sir. You are also a buskiller, butt munch, and a biznitch.
Hey, that's great. Well, nice seeing you again.
Not so fast, little busy. When you are out here in these main streets, you need to wear a bloody scam on that face. We do not want you to get mpox, sir.
Only one person so far in the past 12 months has died of monkeypox.
Why are you being a racist, sir? It is now called Mpox so that it does not offend the Black Lives Matter.
Anyway, I am not worried about whatever pox, or COVIDs, or any other disease. I take enough vitamins and do not eat GMO trash. I am not taking any gene therapies.
What the bleep do you think, stupid green dude? Why do you want to kill my grandma, sir?
Grandma live here?
My grandmother lives across the pond in the Isle of Wight.
So, please tell me how me not wearing a scam in the southwest part of the United States will affect your grandma in the United Kingdom.
Because it is science, green dude. Science. Even Dr. Freud and Klaus Schwab will tell you this, sir. The 99% needs to wear bloody scams on that face so we can get rid of the virus that Dr. Freud is funding that will kill over 80% of the people that get infected with it. I mean, it is the polite thing to do. Please do forget the other thing I just said. That was misinformation.
Please help me understand. Dr. Frati is still funding the gain-of-function research. They have made a new strain of COVID that will kill 80% of the people coming in contact with it. And this is okay. And the best way for the 99% to protect ourselves is to wear a scam on our face. The package even says it does not protect against COVID. But that is how you want the public to protect from a virus in three different labs funded by the 1%.
Precisely, Green Dude. We want you to be safe.
If you want the public to be safe, then why not stop the gain-of-function research laboratories and leave everyone alone?
Why are you such a racist, Green Dude?
Just like a true globalist. Just change the subject when you lost the argument.
The UK Daily Mail is reporting that eating broccoli can give you COVID. We have to now take you into G. Globalist Slayer so we can monitor you, Green Dude.
Never.
That was the wrong choice of words as Green Dude. Now I am forced to run my hands through your long flowing mane.
Don't you have any hobbies other than stalking me?
That was a bad decision to open that front door, Green Dude. You keep stepping in it. I'm now going to have to inspect the junk. Please produce said dungarees into my arms as if we are slow dancing to Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. We can pull the song up on my Spotify and we can dance together if you like, Green Dude.
That's going to be a no for me, dog.
That is going to be a yes for me, dog. I need less rubes, more pubes. Let me repeat myself. I need less rubes, more pubes. Just like New Edition song, let me love you down, Green Dude.
First of all, I have 0% interest. Second, that was not New Edition. That was Ready for the World.
You do not know how to keep the cake hole shut, do you, sir? We are going to bring you to Globalist Lair and hide you even better than we hid the evidence of Hunter Biden's laptop.
Okay, I need to get back to work. Please check out Proof Negative and his radio show. He is on weeknights 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. That is 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time on the West Coast. He keeps everyone up to date on truth news. He likes to fight the new world order and educate everyone. Please help your friends wake up. Go to freedomizerradio.com and click on Listen Live. Check out the schedule and find some of the other shows too. You will be glad you did. freedomizerradio.com.
If you listen to Proof Negative, you will be considered a domestic terrorist threat. We demand you never ever listen to the Proof Negative show. You better continue to get your gene therapies and do not complain when you get a heart attack, blood clots, or a stroke. You only get those when someone like this Green Dude tries to provide you with false information. Now get out there and get those bloody scams on that face.
So we told you on Friday about the internal documents from Twitter that Elon Musk released, gave to Matt Taibbi, who wrote about them, and then they told us, Taibbi and Musk, said that this is just the first batch. You're going to get a lot more in days to come, over the weekend and yesterday. But they never came. That's kind of weird. The deadline came and went. What happened? Well, we learned today what happened. This weekend, Matt Taibbi and Barry Weiss, who's helping him do this reporting, found out that the general counsel of Twitter, that would be the former FBI general counsel, James Baker, had been vetting the documents before Taibbi and Weiss could see them. In other words, removing the ones that might incriminate him or the feds. Apparently, even Elon Musk, who owns Twitter, didn't know this was happening. Now, keep in mind, OK,
case you're looking for evidence of sinister intent, this same Jim Baker was sort of the architect of the Russia collusion hoax in 2016. This is the guy who obtained the fraudulent FISA warrants and targeted Michael Flynn, for example. So this afternoon, Elon Musk fired Baker from Twitter. Quote, in light of concerns about Baker's possible role in suppression of information important to the public dialogue, he was exited from Twitter today. An amazing story that just happened. So to make sense of it, we are happy to be joined by Miranda Devine of the New York Post, who's been at the center of the story for over 2 years. Miranda, thank you so much for coming on. What do you make of this?
Hi, Tucker. Well, look, as you and I discussed on Friday night, it was pretty obvious that the Twitter files that had just been released were missing a crucial element, and that was the FBI. So, you know, we surmised that somehow Elon Musk had redacted it or someone had withheld the information about the FBI's intervention.
May I ask you to pause right there, Amanda? Miranda, you were the only person who said that, actually. It wasn't me, it was you. You were the first person who took a look at those documents and you said, someone has taken out the incriminating stuff. And I think you were the only person to catch that. So I just think you deserve credit for it.
Thanks. Well, so the FBI, we knew, had pre-bunked to the social media platforms our story. Before it came out, they told them to expect a pile of Russian disinformation, and Twitter was told by the FBI, we know from Joel Roth, to expect that it would be in October and would probably refer to Hunter Biden. So we knew that. There had to be something about that at Twitter, and yet there wasn't in the Twitter files. And it was pretty obvious who was suppressing that information, who was the person with the biggest motive. It was Twitter's top lawyer, James Baker, who, as you just said, had been the top lawyer at the FBI, the quarterback of the FBI-Russia collusion scandal. And he had had to leave the FBI because of that. And lo and behold, he shows up at Twitter 5 months before the 2020 election. And lo and behold, one little element did come out in the Twitter files Friday night. It was this one email that had the date and time removed from it, very peculiarly, but it was from James Baker, and it was weighing in on the decision on the morning of October 14, 2020, a few hours after our story came out, and there was James Baker weighing in on the side of censorship, no surprise.
Amazing. And as you said at the very outset, this is not just a story about free speech on social media. This is a story about the corruption of the FBI, federal law enforcement. And you were absolutely right. Miranda Devine, vindicated once again.
And Tucker, look, yeah, Elon Musk needs to let all the information out, let us all see it. No more of this
right.
Curating and holding back.
No, it's ridiculous. I appreciate it. Thank you, Miranda. Subscribe to the... Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson. Tonight, it's funny about profound change. You always imagine when things change radically, there are going to be troops in the street and you're going to know this is the pivot point. This is the revolution. But that's most of the time not what actually happens. Usually there's some guy in a suit and tie speaking soothing words. And you don't even know that everything is changing when it is. That's the case with what happened on June 15th, 2012, a decade ago. On that day, Barack Obama walked into the Rose Garden and announced, full of self-confidence and coolness, Obama announced that his administration decided actually not to deport millions of illegal immigrants. Henceforth, Barack Obama explained, these millions of people would no longer be identified, in fact, as illegal aliens or even breakers of federal law, which everyone had assumed they were. No. Going forward, they would be called dreamers. So illegal aliens are bad, of course, but dreamers are good. And because to control language is to control reality, these dreamers would no longer be subject to federal law. They'd be above federal law because you can't ban a dream. That's effectively the case that Obama made. Now, what Obama did that day was, strictly speaking, illegal. Several courts later ruled that it's illegal, obviously. Only kings and legislatures get to change the law. American presidents do not have that power and never have. But no one stopped Barack Obama from doing this, so he did it anyway. And the effect, the intended effect, was immediate. Foreign nationals flooded into the United States. Over the decade before Obama's Dreamer Rose Garden announcement, about 8,000 unaccompanied minors showed up at the U.S. border every year. After Obama redefined lawbreakers as dreamers, more than 24,000 showed up. And that's accelerated. Under Joe Biden, the number has grown to 130,000 per year. Now, it's interesting where these people are coming from. They're not coming from a contiguous nation, Mexico. No, they're coming from much farther away. According to new numbers from HHS, 32% of unaccompanied migrants they're seeing are from Honduras. 47% are from Guatemala. Look at a map. 13% are from El Salvador. Those are far away. Those are in Central America. Just 1% are coming from Mexico. What's going on here exactly? Well, mostly they are teenagers. The overwhelming majority are over the age of 14. They're not little kids. And again, this is accelerating. And it didn't stop during the last administration. The Trump administration didn't stop it. Under media pressure, that administration agreed to end so-called family separations at the border. Really, they're inhumane. But the fact is, family separations happen all the time to American citizens. If you commit a crime, you're going to be separated from your kids, and NBC News won't care at all, much less report it. But illegal aliens, dreamers, shouldn't be forced to face these consequences, explained the New York Times. So now they're not faced to, because they're dreamers. So naturally, the surge continued. But why? Why? Typically, a country calculates its immigration levels based on its internal needs. So all throughout American history, there have been periods where, oh, we need people to do this or that. Let's import those people. But based on the state of the U.S. economy in 2022, these are not the people you would import if you cared about your country. Almost none of the arrivals have a meaningful education. They're not trained to participate in the emerging economy you hear so much about. STEM plays no role in this. There's no economic justification whatsoever for these levels of immigration. And of course, immigration destabilizes your society. It makes it far less cohesive. That's always true. It doesn't matter where they're coming from. If you have a ton of new people, you're less cohesive. So why are they coming? Well, there's only one reason. Because the Democratic Party wants new voters. Period. That's not a racist conspiracy. There's a racist conspiracy. No, it's not. It's true. And we know that it's true, not because we heard it on Alex Jones, but because leading Democrats have said so repeatedly in public for years. And here's the latest example. Here is Chuck Schumer, the head Democrat in the U.S. Senate, last month.
Now more than ever, we're short of workers. We have a population that is not reproducing it on its own with the same level that it used to. The only way we're going to have a great future in America is if we welcome and embrace immigrants, the dreamers, and all of them, because our ultimate goal is to help the dreamers but get a path to citizenship for all 11 million or however many undocumented there are here.
Everything about that was a lie. We need workers, really. There are, what, 7 million American-born men who have dropped out of the workforce, workforce age who just aren't working, who are on the Internet all day? Does anyone care? No. Just replace them. Americans aren't reproducing. Really? Why? Well, because the economy has changed. And what's their answer to that, the Democratic Party's answer? Well, the Treasury Secretary told us a month and a half ago, she said, if you're worried about the economy, have an abortion. People who want to have kids increasingly can't. Why is that? Well, because the food supply and the air and water have been poisoned and sperm counts are half what they were a few decades ago. So these are specific problems that have prevented millions of Americans from having families, from reproducing, as Chuck Schumer just said. And you could fix them if you tried, but they're not trying. Instead, the solution is to replace the people who aren't reproducing with millions of new people from other countries. That's not a racist conspiracy theory. Chuck Schumer just said it. However many undocumented there are here, Schumer added. So as a political matter, what is this? Well, you're hearing a lot about threats to democracy. This is an actual threat to democracy. This is an actual effort to disenfranchise American voters. It's an attempt to replace their vote with a new electorate. So this is incredibly dark. And it's not a referendum on the people coming here, most of whom are, well, they want to be here, so that says something good about them. No. This is a measure of the intent of the people in charge, the malice behind what they're doing. So it's hard to believe this could become law. This could be codified since Republicans just took over the House. Oh, but it could be. In the lame duck session, which does not represent the recently expressed will of voters last month. A month ago, voters cast their ballots, and they said, we would like a Republican House, and they got one. But that's all about to be short-circuited. New reporting suggests that Democrats and several Republicans are working on a deal to pass mass amnesty for millions of illegal aliens before the new Congress can be seated. Kevin McCarthy, the incoming House Speaker, has promised not to hold a vote for any immigration bill until the border is secure, because it would be insane to do otherwise. And yet several Republican members of the Senate are trying to pass a mass amnesty before the new Republican Congress is seated next month. Leading that effort, and should become famous for this, is Tom Tillis, the Republican senator of North Carolina, joined by Democrat Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona. According to Axios, between 10 and 12 Republican senators could join this plan. And that would include names you're probably familiar with. Susan Collins of Maine, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Mitt Romney of Utah, and as we said, Tom Tillis of North Carolina. Then several retiring senators, Rob Portman, Roy Blunt, Richard Burr, are also being courted to support the bill. Imagine someone who's on his way out of Congress in days will be codifying a law that will change the country forever. So how are they justifying this? Well, clearly their donors want it, right? Because cheap labor is always the justification for everything. It's a short-sighted view. Tom Tillis is saying this is okay because it will only offer amnesty to the dreamers, Barack Obama's dreamers. Illegal migrants supposedly came to this country as young people. So by offering amnesty to dreamers, what will happen next? Well, what happened last time? The U.S. Congress will incentivize more foreign nationals to flood into the country. And that's the whole point of it. It's why Obama did it a decade ago. So what will happen to our economy, which is at the verge of a real downturn? Everyone knows that. Well, let's see. The average dreamer is 28 years old. 28 years old. The average income, the median income of dreamers is $26,000. That's far lower than the median income of Americans. So that's not an attack on anybody. It's only a simple observation. If the country is getting poorer, you probably don't want a lot more poverty imported. Again, why is that untrue? Well, it is true, and everyone knows it's true, and no one has the brass to say it out loud, but it's real. And by the way, we have no idea how many dreamers or other illegal aliens are in this country. The Biden administration has been working with the government of Mexico to hide those numbers for 2 years now from the public. Yeah, so much for your democracy. The Center for Immigration Studies just exposed this in one of the most important investigations from the border in a long time. Watch.
After this short bus drive from a Mexican government shelter across from Calexico, California, Mexico's immigration service will hand them over to their American counterparts at an official port of entry, with temporary legal status papers already in their folders. Once CBP processes them in, they're all released to begin permanent lives working in American cities of their choice. These ones and thousands more entering the same way all along the U.S.-Mexican border won't have illegally crossed a river, won't have hiked through brush, and won't have paid thousands to cartel smugglers. Maybe most importantly to the Biden administration, they surely won't end up in the historically swollen, politically problematic illegal crossing statistics. Instead, Biden's DHS legalized these people before they could commit the illegal act they intended when they left home. The U.S. Customs and Border Protection pre-approved all of them while they were still in Mexico.
So that was, what's the word for that? Would that be immigration fraud being committed by the Biden administration, hiding the numbers so you don't realize how many people are coming into your country illegally? You have no role in this whatsoever. Now keep that in mind when you learn that the Tom Tillis lame duck bill will include, quote, $25 to $40 billion for border security. Now, that's actually a lot, not as much as we're giving to Ukraine, because of course their border is a lot more important than ours. Shut up, racist. But it is billions more than Donald Trump asked for to build the border wall. And at the time, senators in both parties said that was just way too expensive and racist. And people just build taller ladders. Okay. But now the same group is fine with $40 billion for border security. Why is that? Because they know it's fake. They know it's fake. You can build any structure you want. But if the officials manning the gates, like on January 6th, just open the doors, it's meaningless. And, of course, Tom Tillis knows that, to his eternal shame. How out of it is Tom Tillis?
Well, watch Tom Tillis, who clearly has no grounding in the physical reality of America 2022, tell you that letting all these people in, giving them citizenship, is a good idea because really what we're importing is computer scientists and engineers. Watch Tom Tillis.
I've tried to tell anyone who thinks that we just need to find more computer scientists, more data analysts, more people with advanced degrees from the U.S. population that they need to wake up and recognize if we want our economy to continue to grow, if we want to continue to build on this great economy, that we've got to look to legal immigration as a critical part of fulfilling our workforce needs and really growing our innovation economy.
So that's just a word salad of phrases Tom Tillis doesn't understand, of course. But think about that. In the last 2 years, thanks to COVID and the manufactured response to it in this country, our public education system has completely collapsed. Kids are not being educated. We're not producing programmers partly because of policies that Tom Tillis stood by and allowed to be enacted under COVID. But rather than fix that, we need to legalize millions of dreamers and give them citizenship. So if you really wanted a lot of computer programmers, there are a lot of them around the world, you would make an active attempt to identify them and import them, and then you could tell us why. But to let in people without high school educations by the millions because we need more computer programmers, now you're just lying to us, Tom Tillis. How stupid do you think we are? Pretty stupid, apparently. So what's the border actually look like? Well, Charlie LaDuff, our reporter friend from Michigan, formerly the New York Times, has been to the border recently, spent a lot of time there, caught a lot on video. Here's some footage that tells you who's actually coming over.
In the last 2 years, how many people have made their way into the United States?
I think last year was over 2 million. And the year before that, I think just under 2 million. And then you have the unknown number of people that are gotaways that we have no idea that got away. And then you look at the people that are overstaying visas. I mean, that 11 million number of illegals in the United States is just a fantasy.
New York complains about 1,000 a month. And we have 1,000 a day.
Yeah.
2,000 a day.
Yeah, this right here is probably 350 right here. In the meantime, probably a mile downstream, they're probably running a bunch of dope because all our people are tied up over here with this. That's why they send them big groups.
So most Americans, because this is a pretty big country, have no idea the scale of this. It's been going on for 2 years, and it will completely change this country forever, and it's continuing, and nobody is doing anything about it. And no one seems upset about it. Is Tom Tillis upset about this? No, computer programmers, reading his stupid libertarian talking points from 1996. We're going to have a lot more footage from Charlie LaDuff from the border, and it shows you what's actually happening there. And a lot of people crossing are nice people with families who just want to work and hang drywall, and that's great, and everyone supports that. Quite a few of them, though, are drug smugglers, actually. That's true. This is all being orchestrated by the cartels, and some of them wind up killing Americans.
I have 5 motion-activated cameras. I've got 2 way back that way and 3 back in the ranch here. It's a very poor sample because I've had over 100 trails coming through the ranch. And so 5 over 100 is only 5%. And on those 5 cameras, between February and October, 2,500 images. An intelligence officer with the Border Patrol told me that he believes 20% are carrying drugs. On this ranch, we've been here 35 years now. It's a wonderful ranch, except we are very ticked off that all these drug packers are coming through my ranch to poison our American people.
So the closer you get to the border, and this is true of Republicans and Democrats, Hispanics, whites, blacks, none of that matters. Any American who's close to the border is horrified by what's going on there. So the only way that you could support this is by intentionally ignoring what's happening there, like Tom Tillis is and Lisa Murkowski and Joe Biden and all the rest. Today, our Peter Ducey asked Biden, who's going to be in the area soon, are you going to go see the border while you're down there? Watch this.
Why go to a border state and not visit the border?
Because the more important thing going on, they're going to invest billions of dollars in a new enterprise.
There are more important things going on.
Right.
What's actually happening is the Biden administration ended the policies that would have stopped this flood of unaccompanied minors at the border, and now they want to make the problem even worse, and they're doing it for a reason. They're telling you what the reason is. You're not allowed to notice, but it doesn't make it any less true. This is real. This is happening. No one's stopping it. Republicans are colluding to allow it to continue. Subscribe to the Fox News YouTube channel to catch our nightly opens, stories that are changing the world and changing your life. From Tucker Carlson Tonight.
So the U.S. Navy announced it will be lowering its test standards as it struggles to hit its recruitment goals, meeting only about 10% of it so far this year. It comes as Congress reportedly considers rolling back the military COVID vaccine mandate. One Democratic lawmaker telling Politico, does it make sense to have that policy from August 2021? That is a discussion that I am open to and that we are having. And that was Adam Smith. Fox News contributor, former Democratic Congressman Tulsi Gabbard, currently serves as Lieutenant Colonel in the U.S. Army Reserves and served in battle before. She joins us now to react. Tulsi, really? We're still kicking out people from a military that is desperate for people for this reason?
Yeah, Brian, it makes absolutely no sense, and it just points to, frankly, the failure of leadership, both within the DOD and in politicians in Washington, including President Biden. How can they say that they have a recruiting problem without actually looking in the mirror and recognizing, hey, maybe that problem starts with me as a leader in the DOD? I know people personally, Brian, who have been kicked out of the military, some who've served 10 years, 20 years, 25 years, all because of this mandate that makes no sense and, frankly, is based on a lie that Fauci and others continue to propagate as they have throughout this whole thing, which is these vaccines will prevent you from catching COVID and that it will prevent you from spreading COVID. The fact that this is even a question at this point, whether or not to lift this DOD mandate and that Secretary Austin is opposing it, is just absolute madness. What to speak of the fact that you've got people like Adam Smith saying that, we won't even consider reinstating those who were kicked out under this crazy policy because people have to follow orders. It should be no question that this mandate should be lifted and those who were kicked out under this wrong-headed decision should be reinstated with back pay.
Listen, you want to do this and you want to lessen the symptoms and some of the other things. If there is a shot out there that works, it is the American shot. I get it. Certainly not the Chinese shot. But if you get the original shot, we have four variants in from that shot. It's going to be totally ineffective. So what are you saying? Listen to these numbers. Army, 15,000 soldiers short. National Guard, loss of 7,500. The Navy has met only 10% of its goal. Marines, 30% of its goal. The Air Force, 10%, let alone the people we're kicking out. We know also that 3,600 Marines are facing discharge, 834 Army, 1,800 Air Force, 1,800 Army members, 1,900 Navy. We need these men and women. Let's be practical for once in our governmental lives.
It just sends such a – here's the message that it sends, Brian, is that the leaders of this country don't appreciate those who have raised their hands and volunteered to serve and lay their lives down in service to this country. That's the message that they're sending out with this. They're more concerned about, being pleasing or popular to the woke people who really think that this is the most important thing and are actually refusing to look at science than they actually care about doing what's best for people. COVID is a very real disease. It poses a great risk to vulnerable populations, and those who are concerned about it have options available to them, one of them being a vaccine. But to mandate this for the military and kick people out or not allow them to continue serving this country because of a mandate that's proven, again, that's made no sense. It's undermining what they're trying to accomplish with these recruiting goals.
It's not smallpox that erases. It's not polio that gets rid of it. This is dramatically different. It's not a matter of come one, come all. Admiral Kirby and General Austin selling out their brethren is inexcusable. Meanwhile, in honor of the 81st anniversary of Pearl Harbor, 50 for the fallen, a group of active duty and vet special operation forces and civilians will ruck March 50th miles around Oahu. Could you tell us about this?
Yeah, absolutely, Brian. I'm actually joining. I'm proud to support this amazing nonprofit, 50 for the Fallen. In just a few hours here, I'll be joining them as we kick off our 50-mile ruck march. It's a foot march carrying a rucksack as we do in the military. We're going to be starting on the east side of the island and walking 50 miles straight from noon today until 6 a.m. tomorrow, ending at Ford Island on Pearl Harbor at sunrise, marking that 81st anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor, remembering and honoring those who sacrificed all in service to this country, which is so important at a time right now where we have leaders in Washington who are questioning whether or not our God-given freedoms enshrined in the Constitution are even relevant anymore. We've got to remember who these people are who gave everything for this country and why, both 81 years ago and those who continue to sacrifice everything today.
Right, December 6th today and December 7th, obviously tomorrow is that day. Tulsi Gabbard is always great. And if you want more of Tulsi, I know you do, go to the Tulsi Gabbard Show. It's a podcast. Get it wherever you're comfortable getting podcasts. Thanks, Tulsi. That's so great that
Thanks,
you're doing
Brian.
That today. Great. Good.
I'm Steve Ducey.
I'm Brian Kilmeade.
And I'm Ainsley Earhart. And click here.
Liberal soft on crime policies that encourage shoplifting, leading to horrible consequences. An 83-year-old grandfather and Home Depot employee, Gary Razor, was just trying to do the right thing and stop a thief from stealing over $800 worth of pressure washers. But the lowlife shoved him to the ground, and weeks later, Gary died due to complications from injuries during that attack. The suspect is still on the loose as a medical examiner rules his death a homicide. Thieves in North Carolina basically have a license to steal. If the merchandise is valued at less than $1,000, the shoplifter will get slapped with just a weak misdemeanor charge, not even a felony. And Gary's son is speaking out about the horrible crime. Watch.
It's just heartbreaking, right? I mean, my dad was just trying to do a job, right? And now he's no longer with us. So it's paramount to me and my family that we find this particular person and that he receives the justice he so richly deserves.
And robberies are getting so bad in Philly, a gas station owner had to hire Kevlar vest-wearing security guards with AR-15s to protect his store from the city's rampant crime problem. The business owner's tired of the nonsense.
We are tired from this all nonsense. Robbery, drug trafficking, racketing, all kind of hanging around all gangs. They're forcing us to hire the security, high-level security, state level.
Well, Geraldo, they do tell you in a lot of these bigger stores, if someone shoplifts, just let them do it. I guess maybe this is what happens.
That's one way to handle the issue. The other is the way Saks or the big stores on Fifth Avenue handled George Floyd. They put wire fences around and armed guards like the Philadelphia service station. The problem, Jesse, is that there has been a repudiation of the social contract. In the old days, it's a little shoplifting here, a little shoplifting there, but basically people paid for what they took from those these self-service stores. That's how they became so popular. You know, it was an efficient way to do commerce. Now there is this casual, callous, reckless disregard for the law. It is, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it. But I think that the arc of history will solve this because they will confront it with more and more of the armed guards. I remember in the old days in the bodega, Judge, you probably remember this, where they used to put someone with a shotgun behind the cashier. So you come and you stick up the bodega, say the reason the cops are there is because it's been robbed 13 times in 3 months. There's a guy there who's going to say, stop. And if you don't stop, there will be a violent response because society cannot sustain that kind of arrogant disregard for the law.
And this guy is on the loose. There has to be video of him because there's cameras all in these stores, Judge. Hopefully we get him.
Well, I mean, if you have a law enforcement agency that has the ability to seek out individuals as opposed to just enough law enforcement or police officers to handle the crimes as they come in, you know, you've got to have warrant squads. You have to have squads that are looking for, criminals who are on the loose. I mean, police have been defunded. They don't have what we used to have where, even I could assign among my criminal investigators, you're doing this, and you're doing this. Here's the issue, and I just want people to understand this. this guy, once he's caught, can be charged with homicide.
Sure.
He can be charged with a reckless homicide. There is causation between the injury. And, you know, the defendant will claim, well, if I did that to a 30-year-old, he wouldn't have died. Well, you take your victim as you find him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it is absolutely a homicide that they're looking at this guy for. The problem is we live in a society that is becoming, you know, more cold and more inhumane, criminals more emboldened. Who's going to step up and do something about this when we've got this social justice baloney that they're proposing? I mean, at some point we'll maybe get to what Geraldo's talking about, but I don't see it happening. When you've got 10 robberies in Chicago in 2 hours, criminals are on high right now, and they know nobody's looking for them. Nobody wants to arrest them. No one wants to get in a fight. And this guy dies because he's trying to stop a guy from taking two power washers or pressure cookers or whatever they were. And then in California this past weekend, a guy ends up coming out and shooting a guy who was stealing from this shop mart or whatever. The guy shoots back at him and kills him, and they don't charge him with murder. They're saying it was self-defense.
Wow.
So what's happening is our society is now standing down. The law is protecting the stand down. People, when they see this, are stepping back. They don't want to get involved. They get shot and killed. Or they're taking out their cameras. We're in a mess in this country.
Yeah, the thieves used to hit the warehouse, or they used to hit the trucks. Now they just waltz right into the store, grab what they want, and stroll out of there.
Just like you with the Christmas tree. Taking a Christmas tree home from Fox. Imagine the reverse. I don't know how the situation would play out. The reverse, that Mr. Razor were alive, but the offender was dead. Imagine how that would be covered.
Right.
Right? It would be he was a vigilante.
Yeah.
This person was a victim of an oppressed society. This happens barely a peep. Even with video like that, it is clear that businesses this large probably tell everyone not to get involved. That's what insurance is for. But to Geraldo's point, there's a message there, and that message is contagious. Rob these places until they move out. This is a slow roll looting operation. They don't care if these places leave. That they don't care about the people that are suffering, because they're whether they're mini marts or their clothing stores are being shut down, or because of, you know, riots, they never reopened.
Right.
They don't care.
Yep.
So the thing is, you have the insurance companies that are going to, well, you know what, we don't want anybody to get hurt. And at the same time, well, they're just close all of these down. But this is like a metaphorical snapshot of the last 2 years. You know, the casualness that Geraldo talked about, no fear of repercussion. And the reason why there's no fear of repercussion, because if there is repercussions, you're a racist. You're part of the oppressive regime. We're still living in that post-Ferguson era where we allowed the media and we allowed activists to tell us that law enforcement is permanently stained. There's nothing you can do about it, right? And even prisons. So this guy was a repeat offender, menace to society, already known. Not in prison, because we agreed with the assumption that prisons were somehow offensive and we should have less prisons, not more. We need more prisons.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now we're the eggs that are getting broken to make this progressive omelet. You know, where are reparations for victims? You know, if we honestly believe that the origins of all of these problems are 400 years of oppression and slavery, right? And then that caused us to change all of these policies. No cash bail, reduced sentences. Where are the reparations? It doesn't even matter the color of the skin for the criminal. Where are the reparations for the criminal, for the victims that were killed, attacked, raped by people that were let out based on the assumption that all of these rules were racist or oppressive based on 400 years of persecution? That's an interesting lawsuit.
Well, I would hope that the executives at Home Depot would do right by this family.
Yes.
And maybe give some restitution there.
I certainly hope so. They shouldn't have to, right? Like that. You just said something. Where's the AARP?
Yeah.
Where's, you know, who's standing up for him?